නත්ති ජානං අපඤ්ඤස්ස පඤ්ඤානත්ති අජායතෝ යම් හි ජානං ච පඤ්ඤා ච සවේ නිබ්බාන සම්තිකේ. There's no concentration without wisdom, no wisdom without concentration. One who has both wisdom and concentration is close to peace and emancipation. I'm glad to see so many people in this beautiful hall, so enthusiastic. And in learning Dhamma, in meditation, I think this is a very good time for all of us to spend together, spend time together, focusing our mind on the Dhamma, I have noticed a great interest in learning Dhamma in everywhere we go. People are trying to become happy. I think every one of us wants to be happy. And if I ask you all what you really want, you all will unanimously say that I want to be happy and peaceful. I have no doubt about it. And also, I like to think that everybody is trying to be happy, and everybody is trying to find a way to become happy. But if we ask them now, any moment, are you really happy? The answer would be, not yet. We are working very hard to be happy. I don't think there is anything that you would spare, you would not do to become happy. People learn to become happy, earn to become happy, find companions to become happy, separate from companions to become happy. And when they are not united with a companion, they are unhappy, then they look for a companion to make them happy. Then they realize, well, this doesn't seem to work. Let me separate and then try. Doesn't work. I know a man who married 6 times. And he told me, this is not my story, he told me the story. He said, I married 6 times. First time, I thought I would be happy when I marry. Then I found soon that it didn't make me happy. Why? Because I was very impatient and my wife left me. Then I thought If I marry second time, I will be very patient and will be happy. Then he married second time, then she was impatient and he left her. Then he married third time. This time he said he felt that he was immature and therefore it did not work. So his wife thought he was just a little boy. So it didn't work. Separated. Fourth time he married, then he found she was just like a child, immature. So it didn't work. Separated. Fifth time he married, he said that time he found her to be unfaithful, so he divorced. So the sixth time he married and she found him to be unfaithful, so they divorced. Then he told me, Bhante, I am going to marry again. This time my marriage will be perfect. I did not meet him after that. I want to find out whether he is happy now. We try to be happy. We do everything within our capacity to make ourselves happy. Not only marriage. We study. We study all kind of things. And we sometimes as Buddhists we have studied that great learning is a blessing. According to Mangala Sutta, Bahu Satchancha Sipancha Vinayocha Susikito Subhasita Javacha Etam Mangala Muttama. A great learning of various type of things is a blessing. You can argue, you can discuss. Every time you discuss anything with anybody, you win. Because you have a lot of stuff in your head. And you never want to be a loser. That gives you great pride. And you think, gee, I am very happy. I can defeat anybody in discussion, in argument. So great learning, sometimes people consider to be a source of happiness. And of course great learning is a good thing. And Buddha himself has always encouraged us to learn. And he said, Bahusutang Upaseya, associate with learned person. Sutancha Navinasaye, don't forget what you have studied. Thang Moolam Brahmacharyasa, that is the root of holy life. Tasma Bahusutosya, therefore become learned. So there are lot of instructions that we find in the Buddha's own teaching, encouraging us to learn, and that sometimes we think makes us happy, and we learn. What we learn may perhaps not make us happy. Why is that? We learn not writing. We learn all kind of things, but we don't learn the right thing to make us happy. Buddha called any person who has a great theoretical understanding, knowledge is a putujjana. Arya dhamme akovido unskilled in the noble dhamma he calls them unlearned or uneducated person, although he has a great knowledge. Of various things which does not make him happy, therefore Buddha called him an uneducated person. We may have degrees from universities, and yet in the Buddha's definition of learning, we all are uneducated. Why? Because our knowledge alone does not make us happy. Of course, we can sometimes see the glimpse of truth when we learn. And of course, even the theoretical understanding of Dhamma is very important. It is just like when we learn the truth of Dhamma through theories, we can have a glimpse of knowledge of Dhamma, glimpse of knowledge of truth. That is very much like seeing water in a deep well in a desert. When you are traveling in a desert, you see a deep well, you are very thirsty, tired, hungry, and you need water, but you don't find water anywhere except in this deep well. When you stick your head in the well, at the bottom of the well, there is water. That is not a mirage, that is true, real water. But seeing that water does not quench your thirst. Why? Because your hand is not long enough to reach the water. You don't have a bucket, rope, or ladder to reach the water. But you simply know that it is water. And that's not going to quench your thirst. You still will remain thirsty. Similarly, when we know the truth intellectually, logically, rationally, we may gain deep faith, confidence that it is true. But that deep faith, that confidence alone will not make us happy. I think you have perhaps heard of a very famous story of a monk. His name was Pothila. He had 500 students. All the time, whenever he taught in his class, there were 500 students. Because he was very popular, very knowledgeable person. Buddha called him, his name was Pothila, Buddha called him Tuccha Pothila. Tuccha Pothila means empty-headed Pothila. Now he's a great teacher with so many students. In front of these students, Buddha called him, empty-headed Potula, come back, come here. Empty-headed Potula, sit down. How are you, empty-headed Potula? Empty-headed Potula, did you have good sleep? Whenever he called him, he called empty-headed. Empty Potula. The man, the monk who has so much knowledge, so much popularity, with so many students, with great learning, telling the truth, explaining the Dhamma, and still Buddha called him empty-headed Potila. But he was very smart. He never got upset, never disappointed. He thought, geez, Buddha may have some reason to call me empty-headed. Then he went to one of his own senior students. And that senior student happened to be a meditator. Then he went to him and said, could you please teach me how to meditate? Then he said, sir, he was so embarrassed that his own teacher came to him and asked him to teach meditation. But he knew a technique of or trick to teach him meditation. But he could not teach him meditation until he became humble. So he said, sir, I'm not qualified to teach you. Go back, go to such and such a junior monk. So this teacher went to the junior monk, junior than this particular student. And he asked him to teach him meditation. He said, well, sir, I'm not qualified to teach you. Please go to so and so. He sent him to another junior monk. And he also sent him to very young novice monk who happened to be a meditator. Then this novice monk came to know that this particular teacher was sent to him by other senior monks. So he knew the reason why they sent him to him. So he asked him, sir, I don't mind teaching you provided you follow my instructions. That is, there is a pit of mud. Dip in that mud, kneel down in that mud, and folding your palms in that muddy pit. So he went and sat down, folding his palms, listened to this novice monk's instructions, and learn how to meditate. Then, since he had great knowledge, he gained true insight from his own experience. So the knowing the truth intellectually is one thing, and experiencing the truth is quite another. It is not so much of knowledge of various things that makes us happy, but the practice of what we know makes us happy. And this monk, since he knew Dhamma, as he practiced the instructions given to him by this novice monk, quickly attained enlightenment. liberated himself from all kind of psychic irritants, attained enlightenment. Friends, we all want to be happy. We will never become happy until we do what really makes us happy. No matter how many wrong things we do, we will never become happy until we do the right thing. That is putting our understanding into practice. That is what we call meditation. How meditation can make us happy? And what makes us unhappy? The state of mind. When the mind is not pure, clean, cluttered, cloudy, how can we expect happiness from that unclear, cloudy state of mind? Buddha compared that state of mind to a heavy burden. I think probably you remember the very first stanza of Dhammapada, which is a very beautiful stanza, very meaningful stanza, which tells us whenever we say or do or think with unclear, impure, cloudy state of mind, the results follow us like the cart that follows the hoof or feet of a bull that pulls the cart. There's a very beautiful simile, and it gives a very profound meaning. The bull that pulls the cart unfortunately does not have any choice. These days you may not see that many carts, that many bulls pulling carts. But just imagine when a bull or an ox is tied to a yoke of a cart. He is constricted, confined to the yoke. And he is pulling the cart, which also is not empty. It is full of merchandise. The cart driver sitting in the cart also is not a very compassionate person. He is greedy. He wants to do his business as quickly as possible and reach his destination very quickly. And he will beat, curse, kick this poor ox or bull. The bull that pulls the cart is not pulling the cart on a very smooth, paved, carpeted road. The road is rugged, full of bumps, dips, potholes, ups and downs. So, he has no choice. He is unfortunate and he has to pull. Sometimes when we use this simile, I begin to wonder whether the ox pulls the cart or pushes the cart. When you pull something, you hold it and go backward, isn't it? But the ox or the bull does not do that. He goes forward and the cart follows him. So does he pull the cart or push the cart? I think bull pushes the cart because the yoke is on his hump, in front of the hump on the neck, and when he goes forward, the hump pushes the cart. So anyway, the bull is not very happy. Why he is pushing a very heavy burden? Buddha used this simile, very beautiful simile, to illustrate our state of mind when it is full of impurities, greed, hatred, delusion, confusion, anger, tension, worry, fear, and so forth. With these things, no matter what we do, our life is not happy. So Buddha said, on the other hand, when the mind is pure, clean, and with that pure, clean state of mind, when we do certain things, think certain things, and speak certain way, then the result is very light, like our own shadow that follows us wherever we go. We even never feel the shadow, because it is very light. When the mind becomes light, we are happy. Making the mind a light is called enlightening. Light is used in two sense. One, mind becomes bright. When it is clear, it becomes bright. On the other hand, it doesn't have any weight. In both sense, the word light is used. When we cleanse our mind through the practice of meditation, these two things happen. On the one hand, mind becomes light. On the other hand, life becomes light, not heavy. So when we attain stages of enlightenment, the Pali word used by the Buddha is called Ohita Bhara. Ohita Bhara means laid down the burden. Bhara means burden, weight. Ohita Bhara, the one who is free from this mental, psychic burden, is called Ohita Bhara, the one who has laid down the burden. Or one who is enlightened. That means mind becomes bright, dispelling the darkness of ignorance, darkness of delusion. Mind becomes bright. Our mind, Buddha said, is luminous. And he said, Pabhasaramidam bhikkave chittam tanchako agantukehi upakkilese upakkilittam thang asutava putujjano napajanati tasma asutavasa putujjanasa chitta bhavana namanatti This also is a very beautiful statement. We all must remember this statement. You can find it in first volume of Anguttara Nikaya. It means because this mind is luminous, but it becomes defiled through the adventitious external defilements. Mind, luminous mind, becomes defiled through the senses that bring information into the mind. Now, in this statement, there are many things to understand. One, when the Buddha said mind is luminous, and yet asutava putujjano na pajanati, unlearned persons don't know that. Who is unlearned person? Asutava, sutava putujjana means learned, ordinary person. Asutava putujjana means unlearned, ordinary person. I said at the beginning, when we learn we become happy, or when we learn we begin to see the truth. Learning what? Learning the Dhamma. And yet we are not totally happy, because although we see the mind is luminous, we don't know how to use that luminosity in the mind. Luminous doesn't mean it is totally pure, because if it is totally pure, it can never become impure. Once something is pure, stainless, it can never become impure. Since it becomes impure, it also is not totally pure, and yet it is luminous. Luminosity does not mean purity. Luminosity simply means the potentiality, possibility of making it pure. So Buddha said, asutava putujjano na pajanati. Unlearned person does not know that, therefore unlearned person does not cultivate the mind. Chitta bhavana nama natthi. Chitta bhavana means cultivating the mind. How we cultivate the mind? You know, whenever we want to clean a room free from dust, make it free from any impurities, especially dust and so forth, what should we do? We vacuum it. But if you keep the windows and doors open and vacuum it, as soon as you finish vacuuming, because the doors and windows are open, dust can come inside. Therefore, what we have to do, we have to close the doors and windows and vacuum it. Then outside dust will not come inside. Similarly, when we try to cultivate our mind, the first thing we have to do is to restrain our senses. Restraining senses is called discipline. When we see hear, smell, taste, touch, and think. We have to use this seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, and thinking with discipline. That means, one time Buddha said, in Sanyutta Nikaya, that he has seen people living in hell, and he has seen people living in heaven. You know, how can people live in hell? Only hellish beings are in hell, not human beings. He said he saw human beings in heaven. How can human beings in heaven? Only heavenly beings are in heaven. But he said that he has seen human beings in heaven and human beings in hell. How is it possible? He said, because when a person sees, hears, smells, tastes, touches something and thinks something, that instant, if greed, hatred, anger, jealousy, fear and so forth arise in that person's mind, that person experiences hell. That moment he said he is in hell. On the other hand, when the person sees something, hears something, smells something, tastes something, touches something and thinks something, that instant, if the person is relaxed, peaceful, full of joy, happiness, full of friendliness, compassion, appreciative joy, and become insightful, that instant, that person is in heaven. So, that is how we have to restrain and discipline our senses. We must use our senses not to, when we restrain our senses, we don't mean that we, when we see object, we close our eyes. When we hear a sound, we plug our ears. No. When we see something, we must see it with insight. When we hear something, we must listen to it with insight. Smell, taste, touch, and think, thought, and so forth, we must use with insight, with awareness, mindfulness, so that our mind, luminous mind, will not be invaded by impurities. Luminous mind will remain luminous, and when we cultivate that luminous mind through specific method of meditation, we can make it pure. Luminosity itself is not enough. We all have luminous mind, but our effort should be to make it pure, clean. How? By training our mind to see the truth as it is. We can see the truth as it is only when we gain concentration. As Buddha said in many places, samahitam cittam yathabhutam pajanati. Concentrated mind can see things as they really are. When we see things as they really are, that seeing things as they really are is not just pure knowledge, but it is experience. When we experience the truth as it is, that makes us happy. That is the happiness Buddha always appreciated, valued, and praised. Not any other happiness. You know, living in this world, there are many moments of happiness. Every moment we can bring some degree of happiness, some kind of happiness. And every time we open our eyes, we can see something very beautiful. We can listen to very beautiful music, beautiful words. We can eat a lot of things, very sweet, tasty. And we can touch beautiful things to make us happy. But all these sources of happiness, and all of them are subject to change, temporary, ephemeral. The true happiness comes only when the mind is clear and see the truth with that clear state of mind. And that is called happiness here and now. That is called samadhi sukha, happiness of concentration. Ditta dhamma sukha, happiness that we experience here and now in this very life. So that is why, although there are many sources of making people happy today, people are not happy and still trying to gain true happiness. Those who wish to gain true happiness get involved in the practice that brings them true happiness. That practice is what we call meditation. And meditation is therefore becoming very popular everywhere, all over the world. Because people from experience, when they practice meditation, from that practice they begin to see the truth, clarity, purity, and they experience the happiness right then and there. And that is what makes people more and more interested in getting involved in meditation. So friends, I'm very happy to see so many people these days seeking this means of gaining happiness. And they really will be happy, will be peaceful, will live a harmonious life, and life free from too many confusions, disturbances, without too many problems. They will be able to live in harmony, peace, and experience happiness. I think this may be enough as Dhamma talk, and if you have questions, I'd be happy to spend some time answering your questions. Could you speak up? Either you may stand up and speak so that I can hear you better.
Come forward a bit, please. We can't quite hear you.
Or somebody who has heard the question can repeat it to me. luminous mind. Purifying the mind through the senses, is it enlightenment, you're asking? Now, luminous mind becomes pure when we use our experiences to see the truth, and that makes the luminous mind pure, clean. That means seeing the truth of seeing as it is. What is the truth of seeing? That is, whatever we see is not permanent. Hearing, smelling, tasting, touching and so forth, all are impermanent. When we see impermanence exactly as it is, not as a theory, as a concept, but with concentrated mind, we can see impermanence. That makes our mind steady, clear, so that mind will not cling to impermanent objects. Not clinging to any impermanent object makes the mind happy. Or anytime we cling to any impermanent object makes us unhappy, end up in suffering. That is how the enlightenment can be achieved. Yes. Yeah.
When one sees, hears or touches, can just one say, seeing or just noting that, hearing or seeing?
When one hears, sees, one should note the seeing and hearing. I must use the word noting with little qualification or little explanation. If I say not, I must mean that I would not use words to not. Whenever we use word to not something, what eventually happens is the mind will be obsessed with words. The word will get in our way and the mind will not see what is behind the word. And therefore, when we see something, we don't see seeing, 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 seeing. We don't, when we hear something, we don't say hearing, 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 hearing. When we touch something, we don't say touching, 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 and so forth. But when we see something, we mindfully see what happens to the seeing. When we hear a sound, mindfully we observe what happens to the hearing. What happens to the sound that we hear, we can notice, we can become fully aware of the fact that sound waves change. Sound waves are not permanent. They appear and disappear. When we touch something, if we mindfully pay attention to the touching without using the word, we experience the feeling of touch, and that feeling is changing. But if you use the word touching, 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 you really miss the point. You will not see the impermanence. Impermanence is not a word, not a concept, not an idea. It is the reality, the truth that the mind experiences. So what I suggest, if you like to use the word noting, by all means you use the word noting, but don't mean that you should use the word noting. What I would rather say is that you just pay mindful attention and become fully aware of what really is happening. That takes few words, but not as short as you noting, but it really means is that we become aware of what is happening. So we eliminate the middle agent called word, concept, ideas. That's what I mean. Any other question? You must attach to the dhyana first? You asking?
No, I'm saying, can you become attached to it?
He asked if you can be attached to the dhyanic states.
You know, that is also a very important question. Can one become attached to dhyanic experience, dhyanic bliss? Definitely. People will become attached to dhyanic bliss. And therefore, you know what happened even to the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, former teachers, Alarakarama, Uddhaka, Ramputta and so forth. They had attained the highest jhana called neither perception nor non-perception, especially Uddhaka, Ramputta. And what happened to them? They could not get out of it. And they thought that was the attainment of enlightenment. Why? Because it is so blissful, so peaceful, they attached to it. And that attachment is very dangerous. Why? Because the bliss you experience in the highest jhanic attainment is so powerful that you think that you have attained full enlightenment. And therefore, when we experience jhana, the highest jhana, what really becomes prominent is the purity of mindfulness and equanimity. When the mind is equanimous and pure, I mean, has mindfulness, pure mindfulness and equanimity, then you would not become attached to that blissful state. Rather, you use that blissful state with mindfulness and equanimity to see impermanence of that blissful state. That is how we use the jhanic, even jhanic experience to cleanse the mind, purify the mind, and attain what is called enlightenment. It is possible for somebody to become attached to jhanic bliss. It's possible. But we must by all means try not to become attached to it. Some meditators, especially insight meditators, ask people not to practice jhanas. That, of course, is another extreme. It's a wrong approach. because gaining concentration is absolutely necessary part of the Noble Eightfold Path. Without concentration, you are practicing only Noble Sevenfold Path. Only when you complete the eighth step, gaining full concentration, you are practicing Noble Eightfold Path. So, we must gain concentration and use concentration to see the truth as it is. Because only when we gain concentration, Buddha very clearly stated in many sutras, concentrated mind can see the truth as it is. Samahitam chittam yathabhutam prajanati. This statement has been repeated many thousands of places in the Buddha's teaching. So therefore, concentration is a very, very important aspect of meditation, and yet we should not become attached to it, but use that concentration to see things even more clearly. Yes. Yeah.
The Buddhist saying, contentment is the greatest happiness. Is it explained?
Yeah. Yes, santutti paramang dhanang, greatest wealth. Contentment is the greatest wealth, not the greatest happiness. Yeah, contentment also can become a great happiness because you are fully satisfied with whatever little you have. You are not going on seeking something always new. Seeking something always new is the nature of greed. That is why Buddha called the greed Pono Bhavika Nandiraga Sahagata Tatra Tatra Abhinandini. That's a beautiful definition of greed. That means Pono Bhavika means it wants to be again and again. Nandi Raga Sahagata. Nandi means delight, Raga means attachment. Tatra Tatra Abhinandini, it delights here now and it delights there afterward. So it goes on delighting, looking for new delights. Just like the grass over the fence is greener. So you always go there. It's a new experience. You are seeking always new experience. That is the very nature of desire. When you have contentment, you don't do that. You are content with what you have. Now, that contentment does not refer to simple, ordinary, mundane things. That contentment refers to the full satisfaction, happiness when one gains liberation from all psychic irritants. That is the contentment. That is why when an enlightened person goes on collecting food, alms food, when they receive a little, they think, it's good that I received little. When they receive nothing, they say, it is very good that I didn't receive anything. I can spend that time meditating. Instead of spending eating, I spend that time in meditation. It's good that I did not receive anything today. So, it doesn't matter to them. Whatever happens, they are content with that. That is the kind of contentment that Buddha always praised. Greatest happiness is called Nibbana. Nibbanam paramang sukhang. That contentment is not paramang sukhang, it is great wealth. But once you attain Nibbana, it of course becomes greatest contentment too. But the highest happiness Buddha called always Nibbana, attaining full enlightenment.
At the beginning level of practice, when we see anicca, it leads to some revulsion towards things, but not to the lightness of letting go, because the craving is still so powerful. What are skillful means for bringing about more lightness when seeing anicca, rather than just revulsion towards what is seen?
You know, at the beginning stage when you see anicca, anicca means impermanence, if you deliberately cultivate revulsion without insight, you definitely will be disappointed. And therefore, even at the very beginning stage, whenever you see impermanence, don't try to react to impermanence or reject anything at that time, but just be mindful of the reality. When the mind becomes pure, clear and steady, establishing mindfulness, then impermanence turns into impermanence encourages revulsion. But at the beginning, just be mindful of impermanence only. Don't try to reject anything at the beginning. But try to deepen your understanding, your insight, your wisdom of impermanence. Yeah. Yes? Yes. I'm glad you mentioned it actually. I was emphasizing only one of the three characteristics. Why I did not go into other two is because once you see impermanence, other two naturally arise in your mind. When you see impermanence, and when you see very clearly impermanence, anytime mind tries to hold on to impermanent things, you will see mind gets frustrated, because the moment mind tries to hold on to impermanent things, it disappears. You know, certain things are very beautiful, very pleasant, very encouraging, sweet, and mind tries to hold on to it. Next moment it disappears. Then mind realizes that impermanent, that particular object betrays the mind. When it tries to hold on to it, it is gone. So disappointment arises naturally through the knowledge of impermanence. So first we must try to understand impermanence, and then when knowledge of impermanence becomes deep, we begin to see, the mind sees it. Mind sees that the moment the mind tries to hold on to impermanent thing, it goes, it changes, disappears. That disappearance of pleasant impermanent things makes a mind disappointed, unhappy. That is the second characteristic. The third is even deeper than that, more subtle and more difficult for people to understand. Third is selflessness. Boy, I even don't want to mention that, because people sometimes get so angry with the word selflessness. I don't know how much time you have. I have a story to tell, but you might be tired by now. But those few who are interested perhaps might like the story. My story is based on the Buddha's own teaching. Buddha gave a very beautiful metaphor. And this metaphor, if you take literally, you will not want to know Buddhism or become Buddhist or accept Buddhism at all, if you take it literally. But if you take it as a metaphor, you can see the deep wisdom of this metaphor. Before I tell you the metaphor, I tell you my story. I made up that story to illustrate the metaphor. The story is this. At the moment of conception, our conception in the mother's womb, that very moment, greed arises. Right? The very moment we conceive in our mother's womb, greed arises. That instant, ignorance arises. As soon as greed arises, ignorance arises, and greed recognizes ignorance. Why? Because both greed and ignorance existed in the past. Therefore, as soon as greed arises, ignorance arises, then ignorance recognizes greed, greed recognizes ignorance. As soon as they recognize each other, they fall in love with each other. Both greed and ignorance. As soon as they fall in love with each other, they don't wait 1 second, their child is born. What is this child? This is a genderless child. And this child we call self, I. This I is the child of greed and ignorance. Now, this child, genderless child, if the moment, at the moment of conception, if that little embryo has X and Y, then is this I call, I'm a boy. If that little embryo is 2X, then this child calls, I'm a girl. Now, I am a girl, I am a boy, began at that moment. Now, this is I. This I is supported by greed, that is the mother, ignorance, that is the father of this I, and this I is nourished by these parents, by greed, by ignorance. Always nourish, take care of it, lull it, feed it. Always greed and ignorance feed I. And I become very proud and arrogant, and ego arises. But neither mother nor father can control this I, this child, this ego. Then one day mother gets tired. What is the mother? The greed. And she gets so tired, she wants to consult her counselors, advisory board. Her advisory, who are in her advisory board? Jealousy is one member. Fear is another member. Anxiety, another member. Rivalry, another member. Confusion, another member. All these members sit in counseling. and the mother goes and counsel, ask them advice. Now look, what can I do? My child is so arrogant, so stubborn, so egotistic. I cannot control. What can I do? Advisory board unanimously tells her, don't worry. He's okay. You are doing well. Go ahead. Support. Support your child. Then the father, ignorance, gets tired one day. And he goes to the same advisory board and asks their advice. Then again, they give him the same advice. Don't worry. He's okay. Or she is okay. You are doing well. Go on. Support. Support. So, these parents go on supporting this child. So as we grow up, this is our I. We can never get rid of it. Why? Mother is there, father is there to support this I. Buddha said, this my story I created based on the Buddha's metaphor. What is the Buddha's metaphor? Buddha said, Matarang pitarang hantwa rajano dvecha khattiye rattang sanucharang hantwa anigoyati brahmano. That is, having here mother, matarang means mother. Mother is greed. Pitarang is father. Father is ignorance. And Buddha said, kill the mother, kill the father. Matarang pitarang hantwa rajano dvecha khattiye, kill the king. Who is the king? This ego, this I. Dvecha khattiye, two warriors are nihilistic view and eternalistic view. Kill them. Rajano dvecha khattiye rattang sanucharang hantva. Destroy all your fetters. Fetters are the citizens. Ratta is the country. Country is this whole mass of aggregates. Destroy them. Kill the country, destroy the country with its citizens. Now, in this metaphor, greed is mother, ignorance is father, I or ego is king, two warriors are nihilistic view and eternalistic view. So, you can see how beautifully Buddha put all this together, and you can see how our I began to manifest, how it was born, how it is supported. Anytime you look at yourself, you ask yourself, where is this I? If you don't have greed, where is the I? If you don't have ignorance, where is the I? I mentioned one of the songs that I had heard from a woman. She said when she was driving, she always heard this song. The first line of the song is, "I, I, 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 I." The first line. Second line of the song is, me, 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 me. Third line of the song is, my, 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 my. Ask yourself, is there any moment in your life you think without these three lines? You can never think. You think either I or me. Oh my, where does that come from? That comes from this parents, these parents, greed and ignorance. And so this is a perfect union. I call union of onion. I think you might have heard of this union of onion. In the onion, I is in the middle. On and on are on both sides. When you spell onion, how you spell onion? On, O-N, I-O-N. Isn't it? So, I is trapped in the middle. And then you go on and on and on and on. Right? So, it is humorous, at the same time this is very real, philosophical, very factual teaching. So, when we meditate, we begin to see this reality. We would not get upset. I was telling my friends, I wrote an article, and whenever I write something, I give it to somebody whose mother tongue is English. English is not my mother tongue, it is my second language. So whenever I write something, I don't have sufficient confidence in publishing it without showing it to somebody whose language is mother tongue is English. So I wrote this article and gave to native English speaker in the United States and asked him to look at it and correct my English. For 6 months, I never saw him. Then after 6 months, he came and I invited him for a walk. When I was walking, as soon as I saw this man, I wanted to ask him about my article. But I was so hesitant because he might get offended because he did not do anything about the article. So, even when I was walking, I hesitated to ask him because that would simply spoil our walk if I hurt his, feeling and made him angry. So I was thinking, while having a short, casual conversation, I was thinking. Then finally, my mind went on, itchy, until I asked this question. So finally, I picked up a lot of courage and very diplomatically I asked him, by the way, you must be very busy these days, you must be reading a lot of things and probably you might have had some time to read my article as well. He said, yes, I read your article. Then he said, when I read your article, I saw something you mentioned about selflessness. I got so angry, I threw away the article. Because that is what I have been trying to all my life to promote, myself. Self-esteem, self-promotion, and so forth. And you say, I don't have it. I threw away the article. That was the end of my article. You can see how difficult it is for people to understand selflessness. It is not a very sweet, palatable subject. That is why I did not mention at the beginning. I simply said impermanence. You can relate to it every day. Today you marry, tomorrow you divorce. Impermanence. Marriage is impermanent. Well, accept it. Today you are mourning, you are happy. Evening you are not happy. Happiness is impermanent. You can relate.